Hello again there, folks. So I just wanted to have a look and a bit of a ramble at this article that I came across recently. This one's from the 22nd of November, but this story is it's actually quite easy to find online. And it's this particular headline's called "Euthanasia as an Option for Canadian Nursing Home Patients Who Are Sick of Lockdowns." Now, before I look at this, it's like this year, I've always been a little bit sort of suspicious of where the world was going, and I've certainly done a lot of videos and stuff, blog posts on it recently this year. I think the running theme has been the idea of this technocratic dystopia. And so every now and then you come across a story like this, and it's as if like it just drives the point home, and it's right out there in broad daylight. So this is a story of an old woman. She was 90 years old. And she'd been through one lockdown because of the virus, of course, in Canada. And it was then on the cards that there was another one coming. Now, she was perfectly healthy and she's a very lively and outgoing woman. And the idea of being locked in her, she was in an old people's home, I believe. And the idea of just being locked up again, where she couldn't see her family, she couldn't see her grandkids, who were the light of her life, and she's gone along and decided that she just couldn't cope with it, and she's asked to be given the injection and euthanized. Now, just to be clear, it isn't as cut and dried as just going along and having that done. They didn't just agree to it straight away. But anyway, it says, she almost overnight went from a very active lifestyle to a very limited, so this is the first lockdown, a very limited life, and they had very early on a complete 2-week confinement just to her room, her daughter said. So she's in an old people's home, she's just got one room to stay in. She was just drooping. It was contact with people that was like food to her. It was like oxygen. She would be just tired all the time because she was understimulated. Mrs. Russell supported Canada's medically assisted dying, but the first doctor to whom she applied refused because she had too much to live for. She applied again after more concrete medical health issues emerged. This time the doctors gave her the tick of approval. She just truly did not believe that she wanted to try another one of those 2-week confinements to her home, her daughter said. Even to die, Mrs. Russell had to leave her nursing home. She spent a week with one of her children before she was given a lethal injection surrounded by her relatives on October the 20th. She was able to direct a peaceful, pain-free death on her own time and avoid a great fear of hers, which was to endure winter and lockdowns, her daughter said. And this was reported at BioEdge. But as I say, it's out there. It's been reported a few times around Canada. And so here we have a situation where a perfectly healthy woman could no longer bear the restrictions being placed on her life, being locked down. She couldn't see her family. And the first thing is the restrictions themselves and the low-level sort of bureaucracy. And then you've got the second thing which comes in, which is that they've the same technocratic mindset has also made it possible where if you don't like that, if you don't like the circumstances, you don't like not being able to see your family at 90 years old and that you're going to be locked in a small one room for weeks on end, that at the end of the day, they're going to make it possible for you to end your life rather than find some way around that. And I just find the whole idea of that absolutely horrific. So in the name of protecting the public from a deadly virus, supposedly, and the health of the people in general, we've arrived at a place where the lockdown measures, the restrictions placed on people's lives, it's leading them to feel suicidal. And then the system is also willing to facilitate the suicide. So if essentially, I mean, I know like these euthanasia laws have been slipping in quietly around the West. And just like abortion before it. They always come in at it with, it's a slippery slope thing where they say, well, if a baby is like severely handicapped or something, is it not more cruel to leave it alive? And then with a euthanasia, they'll say, well, you know, at the end of the day, you can have somebody who's in horrible pain. They're never going to get better. Would you then be in favour of it? And so on. But it's like in each case, so in the case with abortions, we're pretty much at the stage now where babies are just being killed upon birth. And then with the euthanasia at the end of people's lives, they're streamlining that process as well. There was another sort of controversial issue with a girl in Holland a few years ago who was just 17 years old. And here we have it where it's no longer that you are so horribly ill and in pain, and it's a humanitarian act to just gently let you go. Instead, it's because you're depressed, and so the system which is being set up to protect people against this deadly virus is now also going to streamline it so that they can kill you. You allow you to die if you're not happy with the restrictions. How nonsensical is this? How insane is this? Because then it reveals that actually the restrictions are just a form of control, and they're a form of technocratic control. Now, this, of course, gets us into dystopian territory. And I thought, well, how would you actually define a dystopian society? I mean, just a thing here, it says five characteristics of a dystopian fiction is government control, environmental destruction, technological control, survival, and loss of individualism. And then further, more in-depth one says characteristics of a dystopian society. Propaganda is used to control the citizens of society. Information, independent thought, and freedom are restricted. A figurehead or concept is worshipped by the citizens of the society. Citizens are perceived to be under constant surveillance. Citizens have a fear of the outside world. Citizens live in a dehumanized state. The natural world is banished and distrusted, which is just outdoors. Citizens conform to uniform expectations. Individuality and dissent are bad. The society is an illusion of a perfect utopian world. So the perfect utopian world is this hyper-technological and organized society. But there's something gone horribly, horribly wrong with it, and there's some things which are being squeezed out on purpose. Now, a few weeks ago, I did a BitChute video when I kind of looked at how in the Blade Runner movies, the replicants are more human than the actual humans in it, because they still enjoy spiritual or poetry or these metaphysical things. They like to look at the snow, and they've got this more poetic way of looking at the world, whereas the humans aren't. The humans are these sort of dead-souled robots. And what I find about these, first of all, the technocratic society as a whole, as it now begins to reveal itself to us all, and then also about the mentality which runs it, the thinking behind it, is purely mechanical. And so it's as if they've become these robots. And so when in this case, the human nature becomes a problem to be solved, like a mathematical equation, that it cannot quite, the system can't quite understand what it is to be human. And they've then begin to acknowledge that. And then they're going to say, well, at the end of the day, you know, you are the round peg, and there's the hole is square. And if you can't get on board with that, then we're going to toss you aside because it's just inefficient. I don't think this is particularly new either. I think that it's just more explicit now than it's ever been before. I mean, I think it's really since World War II, but you could just keep going back and back. But I think definitely after World War II, the globalist elites and the technocrats running the Western world decided that human nature was a problem, in particular the nature of Europeans. And so then we were then seen as these cogs that weren't quite efficient enough. And time again, you can see that the overarching gist and shift and changes have always been in the direction of the nature of humanity being a problem. The first one, which is more obvious, is the idea of creating a multicultural society, which completely discounts the actual nature of people as being tribalistic and aware of each other's differences and hostile to each other, or just that people have a different, completely different religious views, and a society in which all of them are crammed in together is going to be a chaotic and dystopian one. So you begin there, and then now they warred against human nature there with everything they could. And we find ourselves now in this situation where it's just much more explicit. I mean, I used to think back when I was a kid, like, what would a dystopia actually be like? And if you look at the sort of the stuff that came out in Hollywood, human nature was kind of a given. You'd have killer robots and technology in the future, which could be dystopian, or the world would be wiped out. In actual fact, what wasn't taken into consideration so much is that the elites would view the human nature itself as being the problem. That human nature itself had to be something that was transcended. And if that wasn't possible, then that's a you problem, and not the problem of the technocratic system, all these kind of dead-eyed zombie bureaucrats, or the elite themselves, who do come across as being quite evil. Another way to look at it is that they are just operating a system or a machine. So you get this mechanical thinking come back in again, and if you're inefficient and you won't actually sort of operate the line properly, then you're for the scrap heap. So, I mean, years ago I worked on a line. I had a brief job where I had to pack bottles. And the bottles came down the line and you had to twist them, you had to put the tops on, and it really, really, really went quickly. And my hands are too big, I couldn't quite manage it, I wasn't very good at it. But there was never an option to slow the machine down. You had to operate, you had to sort of speed yourself up, you had to be the one that worked with the machine, you had to keep up with it. And if you couldn't, then you got thrown under the bus. And in the case of where we are now, it looks more and more like if you are then in that in real world to this way of thinking that they're bringing in, they're also going to give you the option to opt out permanently with these euthanasia laws, which, as I say, just like the abortion laws, they're getting easier and easier, and they're streamlining the process. And so you can say that the people at the top are genuinely evil, and they've got their own sort of megalomaniac aspirations on the world. But it's also that it runs on these bureaucrats who actually think like this, and their thinking is utterly soulless, and almost they've become machines themselves. The counter to what I'm saying here would almost always be these purely utilitarian arguments, which is to say that it's justified because more people are being catered for. So, in other words, we've got this machine, this system, and it caters to the greatest amount of people. People's material needs are met. The greatest amount of people are being kept safe from the supposed virus, which is so deadly. And so, therefore, it's justified. We go back to Steven Pinker and his graphs of, people in Africa have got access to Uncle Ben's rice now, so therefore it's justified that people in America somewhere in the Rust Belt have less. The overall amount of comfort in the world is now has increased, so therefore the system is justified, and he'll pull out all of these graphs to prove it and parade it around in his book Enlightenment Now. But what all of this misses is actually what it is to be human in the first place. And so you think back to the 90-year-old woman who just, maybe it's going to be her last Christmas and she wants to spend Christmas Day with her grandkids. Well, the problem is you can't actually put that on a spreadsheet. You can't reduce it to data. And you can't like program that into the system. And so like Rutger Hauer, you know, but when his teardrops will be lost in the rain and all of this, these things can't be quantified, and so the system is beginning to reject it. It's just like, again, you're the square peg going into the circle, and you don't fit. The problem is, how many square pegs are there? Like, is this going to be like half of the population to in one way or another? We were warned about this, you know, especially after World War One, when for the first time European thinkers who tended to be right wing and reactionary because the left, the Marxists, are like materialists, so they don't have too much of a problem with this thinking, but with this purely sort of utilitarian, you've got enough bread, so you should be happy. All we're asking you to do is like lie on your sofa for 2, 3 months watching Netflix. Like, that's it. Why? What's so hard about that? And again, what they're missing is like the real essence of what it is to be human. And it seems like this system is being deliberately set up to squeeze out what makes us human, in the same way they did in earlier decades when they began the mass immigration program. That too missed, and it was only through relentless persecution and brainwashing that they managed to get that sorted out. And now it seems to be, well, you know, if you're still going to hang on to these traits, if you're still going to hang on to these kind of old school romantic notions about what it is that makes a person a person, well, there's no place for you, and we're going to streamline the euthanasia program, and you can just gently sort of drift away. And I find it an abomination. And I'm reminded of what Heidegger said, thinking about technology, when he said, "Only a god can save us," because he was one of the ones who tried to warn us where all of this was going. And how we get out of this, we're going to have to think about in another video. I'll catch you later, folks.